Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And I'm Melody Cederstrom. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. Howdy, Dave.
Howdy, Melody. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday to you. You're not going to add anything there? I'm going.
Oh, happy National Giving Day.
Well, that's a nice day.
That's all I'll say about that.
It's nice to give.
It is.
It's always better to give than to receive. So just keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, come Christmas. No.
Yes.
And
except when you're receiving gold or silver coins that you ordered.
Yes, or get us gifts. Or get us gifts. Well, you know, gold today didn't receive much. It was down. It was up. It was up almost $1,800 before they prior to opening the markets. It was strong prior to that, but they couldn't hold it there. And we'll talk a little bit about that here in a little bit. Gold was down 1180 at 1773. Silver's down 7 pennies at $22.90. Platinum is down 27 at 941. Palladium was down 52 at 1824. The USDX today was weaker today also by 0.29 at let's see, 95 point. Hold on a second, folks. My eyes are deceiving me here. The USDX is down 0.29 at 95.91. Crude oil was down 3.18 at 66.77. 66.77. And the paper markets today, I believe it was another down day in the markets. Oh, 652 points to the downside at 34,483 Dow. The S&P was down 88 at 4,566. The NASDAQ was down 245. That's 245. 1.5% of 15,537. Asia, Shanghai was the only one that was positive. Europe was negative across the board. And 10-year yield, that's been dropping like a rock. 1.43 down 0.09. So, Dave, you know, before we get on the question I'm asked the most, especially when there is down days in the stock market, like 1,000 points on Friday and 600 and some points today, is, well, I thought gold went up when the stock market went down. And people get very discouraged. And when they don't see that immediate reaction, and there's never rarely are there immediate reactions. I mean, these are just, you know, to this point, these are just one day wonders. I mean, we understand the markets. We understand that we've got debt too great to be paid. We understand they will default eventually. We don't know when, but eventually they will, because we have debt too great to be paid. And it really is that simple. So we see these pullbacks in these markets and expect gold to turn around right away. Now, I expect the gold be up tomorrow because you had a weaker dollar today. So I would expect to see, you know, perhaps gold stronger tomorrow. But it doesn't have to have these immediate responses to the markets. It's a long-term investment. And you've got so many dollars in there that are, you know, moving around at the speed of light, because it's all computer trading with these algorithms. You don't have gold reacting the same way as it once did without those algorithms. But you look at the big picture. That's what you have to stay in tune to. The big picture. What are you doing buying gold and silver? What are you protecting? The fundamentals are still strong underneath. And we've seen our dollar get stronger. Sure, by manipulation. Sure, by the, you know, the Fed talk, the speak of Powell. Yeah, we've seen some, you know, that's why you always had Larry Kudlow, whether you liked him or whether you don't, which I really didn't care. But anyway, that's here nor there. It was strong dollar policy, and gold was always a little weaker to the stronger dollar. So, I mean, it's manipulation so much out there. So hang tight. If you see big drops, have we forgotten 2020? When we were getting $3,000 drops a day, $1,500 drops a day, gold responded because it was building, and that was the trend of the market, and bigger things were happening. We'll see what these, it's only 1,600 points. My gosh, the stock market is at, 35,000. The NASDAQ, 15,000. So why are people selling?
Well, Melody, you raised a number of excellent points that clients, precious metal investors, listeners, whatever role you're here in today, would really be smart to take notice and heed. Because, we know now that the old relationship between gold and the U.S. stock market in particular, but all stock markets around the world, since gold is a global precious metal, will likely never be the same. And I attribute most of that, not all of it, because the multitude of things happening in the economy converge to create new relationships, new causations, if you will. I think the largest technical factor in that regard, Melody, is that, I'm going to cough up. Sorry, just got my grandson's cold the other day, ladies and gentlemen. I think that the biggest phenomenon here is the emergence of precious metal, particularly gold, ETFs. And with those ETFs, you're getting the mentality of the paper market traders and investors. And as you said, Melody, along with that comes the high-frequency trading, the algorithmic trading that sell on mentions of words, for God's sake. And I think we are in a new era. Now, whether there's, a return to that someday, I guess we'll see. I don't think there will be. And I think what it forces on all of us is to stay more current, is to stay tuned in. The more, whether you have, $2,000, $200,000, what, $2 million in coin value in your portfolio, the more you have, the closer you better be paying attention. A good way to do that, by the way, is tuning into Financial Survival Monday through Friday. That's my pitch, Melody.
Well, the thing of it is, the ETFs watered down the physical market. That's what it did.
Oh, well, sure.
Wall Street needed something to sell, because they were losing out, and they knew where these markets are heading and going. And as far as I know, these gold ETFs, and so they're not audited, or if they ever were audited, not on a regular basis, and they get the audit themselves. So you really don't know how much gold that they're really holding is, what they claim to be holding. So it's another, it's still another paper asset.
That's exactly right.
But when the stuff hits the fan, what do you think people will be selling those ETFs? Oh, I don't have gold. Just like stocks, gold stocks, shares. You don't own gold. You own the corporation. You own the management team. You don't own gold. The only time you own gold is if you take physical delivery of it. And the fundamentals are still there. Now, I could have discussions on, where physical gold, the currencies and so forth, the monetary policies. you can hold on to that paper and lose your value. I don't think anybody knows what the future holds. But I do know that the simple economic fundamentals, one and one still equal two. And I don't think that will ever change. They might pretend it doesn't equal two, but ultimately it does. Reality is far greater than all of their words, all of their speak, all of their manipulation. Reality still strikes, and it just depends on what reality you want to be in. And, you know, you could take advantage, but all we say is get insured. Just get insured. Insure your, and that way, and get balanced. You know, again, we're not financial planners, but it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out a portfolio is best designed if it's balanced. Unfortunately, most financial planners cannot put physical gold in your portfolio. They don't want you to own physical gold because they can't trade you. They don't make money off of that. They don't want you to have an investment that just, you know, that's there to protect in for the rainy days. And most financial planners really don't understand true monetary policy and how it affects and where inflation really comes to and government and how government wants inflation. Most financial planners don't get it because they just sell what they're told to sell. So anyway, I don't mean to sound like preaching, but so just because you don't have gold react to, you know, $1,500, you know, drop in a couple days, it's okay. What's changed? So we've had some pullbacks in gold and silver. Okay, so what? What's changed? If you bought at higher prices, what's changed? Nothing. In fact, things, on the other hand, seem to be probably a little worse off than when you had initially purchased. We had a weaker dollar, so they brought back. That's good. I mean, that's good if you're holding paper. That, you know, so it's a balance, and that's how you succeed, and that's how gold will protect you. And you know, we were talking about Powell. You know, and now that he's got his job security. Now that he knows he's going to be there, I don't know how long his term is. You know, I've known this over the years, and, you know, you just kind of forget after. I guess it isn't important how long his term is. But now he's talking about that the Fed should step up the removal of its efforts to boost the economy because of inflation pressures. Okay, that makes sense. In an appearance before the Senate Banking Committee, Powell said he thinks reducing the pace of monthly bond purchases can move more quickly than the $15 billion a month schedule announced earlier this month. He expects the issue to be discussed at the December meeting in just a couple of weeks. He told the senators on this committee, at this point, the economy is very strong and inflationary pressures are higher and is therefore appropriate in his view to consider wrapping up the taper of our asset purchases, which we announced at the November meeting, perhaps a few months sooner. And this was a test, I think, Dave. This was just a test to see what his words would do. The initial tapering schedule would have seen bond purchases wrap up around next June or July. And if the committee chooses to accelerate, that could mean an end to tapering like earlier in the spring, maybe April, maybe May. And giving the Fed leeway to raise interest rates anytime thereafter, Dave. So, I don't think he's going to taper after, you know, the markets react like they do.
I don't know. I don't know when. I don't know how much we'll still start on this $15 billion a month cutback, or what. But we do know that, you know, again, as Melody mentioned at the top of the program, precious metal and stock markets both dropped on the news while government bond yields rose. Powell's remarks added worry to markets already skittish over this new Omicron variant, though early indications are that the variant could be milder than previous versions. The Fed's Open Market Committee, which actually sets monetary policy for the Fed, said after its November meeting that the amount of tapering would start at $15 billion, $10 billion in treasuries and $5 billion in mortgage-backed securities. However, its post-meeting statement indicated that it is prepared to adjust the pace of purchases, if warranted, by changes in the economic outlook. Now, meeting minutes indicated that committee members were prepared not only to cut the asset purchases, but to also start raising interest rates if this rising inflation persists. Again, the Fed had been buying at least $120 billion a month in bonds, $80 billion in treasuries, and $40 billion in mortgage-backed securities. Powell says this bond buying, which has added, by the way, $4.5 trillion to the Fed's $8.7 trillion balance sheet, has been, quote, supporting economic activity. However, he said the program's, the economy's progress has taken the urgency out of the tapering program.
Well, then they should, we'll see what happens. And, you know, I don't know if this would actually, because I'm not sure this is what our inflation is all about, eliminating the tariffs that were imposed during the U.S.-China trade war, whether that would help ease inflation. Now, Jacob Lew, the previous Treasury Secretary, that's what he thinks. And I'm just thinking, but that's not where our inflation, that's not where our inflation is coming from. Our inflation is coming from, you know, inflation didn't start with the trade war, did it, Dave?
Well, no, I think Lou's taking the position that eliminating it could reduce prices from a level they'd otherwise be at. That is, you know, cutting these high, relatively high tariffs back to the level that they've averaged in the past, which are substantially lower than the amount the U.S. and China have on each other right now.
Well, raising prices because of the tariffs, I mean, I don't consider that inflation. It's rising prices because of the tariffs, passing it down through the consumer. I mean, that's not inflation. But what it is we're heading into a break, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And, you know, we're talking about inflation. You know, we see inflation creep in and, you know, prices rising. And I guess you have to determine, you know, what is making those prices rise based on what type of inflation. I told Dave, and you know, I only really know one inflation, but local banks, they're scrambling to manage an increase in need, and inflated food prices this holiday season. So they're going to have a hard time. In the Philadelphia region, 16% are food insecure, lacking consistent and reliable access to enough food. And that was according to 2018 data. I think they get this data updated a little bit, but the figure could be over 30% higher because of the pandemic. Inflation, which is at a 30-year high, supply chain issues are fueling these rise in prices. And the index for meats, poultry, fish, and eggs increased by 11.9% compared to last year. This is often the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The nonprofit PhilAbundance, that serves at least 135,000 people in the Philly area per week, originally budgeted to spend about $120,000 per month for food, but by the end of 2020, it was $500,000 per month. Wow. That's huge.
Yeah.
How could that be? Oh, my gosh.
Well, prices have only gone up from there.
Yeah.
Group spent a total of $10.5 million so far in their fiscal year 2021, which I believe ended September 30th, and expects to pay almost 50% more next year, $14.9 million. Meanwhile, the Share Food Program, that's another nonprofit, said it's seeing a 30% increase in food spending compared to last year. The organization also went from serving 700,000 people in the Philadelphia region per month, mind you, to 1 million. Share Food spokesperson Jessica Batista said that the lack of additional emergency sources of food and federal pandemic assistance, like the Farmers to Families Food Box program that ended in May, presents its challenges. PhilAbundance CEO Lori Jones said the organization is ordering food well in advance to address food supply issues. So, yeah, go ahead, Melody.
Well, you know, still speaking about Philadelphia, you have the school. They're having issues where about 50 district administrative staff members will be temporarily teaching classes. They're going to be monitoring cafeterias, answering phones. They're multitasking. Yay. About time.
Practicing what they preach.
But they also began offering daily bonuses for substitute teachers, assistants, food service workers, librarians, secretaries, and nurses. So bonuses just to attract more workers. And in that area, there are 250 teacher vacancies and nearly 1,900 open positions in total. And that's according to the Philadelphia Federation of Teachers Union. So earlier this year, the district doubled its incentives for families to opt out of transportation services from $150 per month to $300 per month in a bus driver shortage. You know, shortages everywhere.
Yeah, and certainly this Philadelphia scenario, just one relatively small area of, you know, when you count the whole country, and it's happening all over the place. nationally, there were almost 600,000 fewer local and state education employees by the end of October than in February before the pandemic began, according to the Department of Labor. A spokesperson for the AFT union said that educators are more exhausted than ever due to a mix of reacclimating students to the classroom, dealing with the pandemic, and working through the recent surge, this in Philly, of violence. That's on top of extra work because of chronic staffing shortages in general. So elementary school students ended last year 4 to 5 months behind their expected level of academic achievement. I think that's according to the McKinsey group. And they say that fixing the teacher shortage is the number one challenge for not just the Philadelphia School District, but districts all across the country, Melody.
Well, you know, this is a story that's been around for a while, but it's interesting because Airbnb, and it's really not that many homes, about a dozen homes in China. Zhejiang, am I saying that right?
I think so.
Zhejiang, the area that's a region of land owned by an organization that's been sanctioned by the United States for complicity in genocide and forced labor. The listings expose Airbnb to regulatory risk under the U.S. law. They also land yet another American tech company in the crossfire between the U.S. and China. Airbnb is one of 13 top-level U.S. sponsors of the 2022 Winter Olympics in Beijing. Now, you know, Dave, you know, you got the U.S., you got U.K. You know, they come out and they talk about considering a diplomatic boycott of the games. You know what? They really should. I mean, just don't talk about it. Nobody does anything. Just do it.
Yeah.
And but you know what? Everyone's afraid of China now.
Yep, the big bad bully has emerged from, well, nearly a permanent or certainly a long-term hibernation. I'm not sure if it's ever going back.
Mm.
And what's particularly challenging about this particular issue is that China's been promoting tourism in that Xinjiang region where it's just been mistreating these Uyghur Muslims and other ethnic minorities.
Christians, I think, too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that whole region in northwest China is a population destination for Chinese tourists anyway. Like the desert landscapes there and an increasingly Disney-esque version of Uyghur culture. It's going to be interesting how the U.S. Treats the Airbnb operations there. We'll let you know if anything noteworthy comes along.
You know, there's home prices are still higher than a year ago, about almost 19.5% in September year over year. It's down a little bit from the gain in August. And but, you know, cities with the highest price increases were, you know, the ones that you would expect: Phoenix, Tampa, Florida, Miami. Phoenix prices were up 33% year over year.
Wow.
Tampa 28%, Miami 25%. So it's like, when will these prices stop? You know, they got to stop sometime, Dave.
I think it's coming. But, you know, while the annualized gains may be falling little by little at the moment, economists say it's unlikely that prices will drop dramatically like they did during the housing crash of, what, 12, 13 years ago. Mm-hmm. Fundamentals of supply and demand still favor an expensive market. We got this one economist, George Ratu at Realtor.com, said the market has cooled since beginning of the year, when dozens of competing bids, contingency waivers, price escalation clauses made home shopping a struggle. especially for first-time buyers. But he added, a growing number of homeowners are preparing to list in the next 6 months, hinting at an uncharacteristically active winter season. Now, you got rising mortgage rates also playing into prices right now. Although everything is relative, Melody, I mean, the average rate in a 30-year fixed fell to a recent low of just under 2.8% at the beginning of August and has been rising since, ending September at 3.15. Still historically real low rates. But if the trend continues, who knows where we end up when.
Well, you know, there's some countries that are now banning citizens from cryptos.
Interesting.
It is interesting. And I just want to throw this in there. Elon Musk tells SpaceX employees that Starship engine crisis is creating a risk of bankruptcy. I mean, are you kidding me?
No, apparently not.
Are you kidding me? You know, is he looking for government money or something? You know, risk of bankruptcy, please. The richest man in the world.
Could be a veiled call for just that. A couple more billion dollars to.
He's turning into a joke.
To partner with SpaceX.
You know, all these billionaires, if you look at them, I mean, they look nutty. I mean, look at the guy from Twitter.
Oh, Jack Dorsey. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
like
look
that
at
mountain man beard.
Well, I don't have a problem with mountain. It's his eyes. I mean, they look whacked out. But that's you. Yeah. I'm sorry, but if you people who have that much money, I think it would affect you mentally. I'm sorry, it would. But anyway, we're going to talk about cryptos. Two largest countries in the world seem intent on effectively banning their citizens from participating in crypto. The crypto world is global, but the real world is broken into 195 nation states, each of which claims control of what happens within its borders. A bill set to be voted on by the Indian Parliament has yet to be seen, but an insider says that it seeks to prohibit all private cryptocurrencies in India. That is, except for certain exceptions to promote the underlying technology of cryptocurrency and its uses. Well, that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, are you kidding me?
That sounds like possibly the biggest loophole I've heard this year.
I mean, what are they doing over there?
Well, I'm sorry, Officer Cederstrom. I just bought it for, you know, to promote the underlying technology of it.
And its uses.
And you're going to arrest me?
It's kind of like, what? I mean, you need, hey, I don't know if I could manage the billions of people, you know, a country with the amount of people that they have and the poverty that they have. But I mean, it wasn't that long ago they came out and they tried to ban cash. It didn't work. So, you know, they don't have a real good record, you know. But, yeah. Anyway, it might be laying the groundwork, perhaps, for a cryptocurrency, you know, maybe issued by the central bank.
That's true.
It just wants to control. And that's what it's all about. That's why governments don't like cryptos, because they can't control it. And that's what they want. Binance, by far the world's largest crypto exchange, recently came out with a list of 10 fundamental rights for crypto users. I mean, are you kidding me? I got to move on from this one, Dave. I got to move on. Oh, my gosh.
Ladies and gentlemen, sometimes it's good to know what buttons to push.
The worst nuclear accident since 1986. It's been that long. Chernobyl. And yet in the lead up to the UN's climate summit earlier this year, newly elected Kishida vowed to restart reactors. The country shut down. Well, this comes after a decade after the tsunami flooded the Fukushima in 2011. We know what happened there and the destruction. And there's a couple of other countries that have unveiled plans for their first reactors. China, the world's number one carbon emitter, promised to construct an unprecedented 150 new reactors in the next 15 years, more than the entire world built in the last 35 years. And
isn't that,
we have to start eating, and we're the ones that have to start eating lab-created meat. Are you kidding me? This is another, are you kidding me, Dave?
I think we need to find out who's producing some of these commercials. Who is that? Is that Geico? Geico, where John McEnroe and Serena mm-hmm. Williams mm-hmm. Are in, and she knocks his food tray over, and he yells, "You've got to be kidding me." I mean, that's like the mantra for the subtitle of our program. Well, you know, here in the U.S., nuclear power plants have been shutting down regularly for the past 10 years or so.
Yeah.
They've struggled to compete financially with natural gas and renewable energy sourced production. But, interestingly, and this occurred right after, I believe, might happen at the tail end of this climate summit, that the Biden administration has pledged to shore up existing nuclear reactors and even invest in new ones. And now, I mean, the $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill that Biden signed into law 2 weeks ago provides financially troubled nuclear plants a $6 billion lifeline to stay open and directs billions more for research into next-generation mini reactors. So that's going on here. I believe the U.K. Is doing something similar, although on a smaller scale. And then there's the Energy Department, which recently approved the U.S.'s first permits for a next-gen small reactor, and help broker a deal for a nuclear startup to build one in Romania, of all places.
Very bizarre. Anyway, we're heading into a break right now, and we'll be returning. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back. One more time to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's in the office taking care of client orders this last segment. You can call her at 1-800-375-4188. Well, disappointing economic day on Monday. Consumers logged online Monday and spent $10.7 billion. Seems like a heck of a lot of money, but it's about a 1.5% decrease from a year ago. That's according to Adobe Analytics. This year's tally marks the first time that Adobe has tracked the slowdown in spending on major shopping days. Adobe first began reporting on e-commerce almost 10 years ago, 2012, and it analyzes more than 1 trillion visits to retailers' websites. Now, despite the slowdown, Adobe expects the entire holiday season will see record-breaking e-commerce activity as shoppers spread out their dollars over more days. So far, from November 1st through Cyber Monday, consumers have spent $110 billion online. Geez, that's up 12% year over year. And on 22 of those days this year, consumers purchased more than $3 billion worth of goods, another new milestone. Adobe anticipates digital sales from November 1 to December 31 will hit $207 billion, which would represent record gains over last year of over 10%. On Cyber Monday last year, consumers rang up $10.8 billion in sales on the web as more people stayed home and avoided shopping in retailer stores due to the pandemic. Marked a record day, however, for e-commerce purchases here. Now, the slight deceleration in online spending this Cyber Monday follows a similar pattern that played out on Thanksgiving Day and on Black Friday this year. Shopper traffic on Black Friday was up 48% compared with last year, but was still down 28% from 2019 before the pandemic began. And so far in November, out of stock messages on retailers' website are up 169% compared with pre-pandemic levels. And shoppers are finding items out of stock 258% more than they were two holidays ago. Wow. What a difference a year makes. Here's another one. 2020, banner year for corporate philanthropy. 2021, not so much. It looks like companies are experiencing giving fatigue, according to Sonia Koja. She's the chief impact officer at Benevity. That's a platform for corporate giving that works with mega companies like Apple, Nike, and Microsoft. The spirit of generosity is alive and well globally, according to Giving Tuesday CEO Asha Curran. Curran started the Giving Tuesday trend on the first Tuesday after Thanksgiving in 2012. Corporations, however, have had fewer reasons to beef up donations this year, beyond, of course, their record profits. The aggregate amount of money donated through Benevity includes both contributions from employees and directly from the employer. Add the two together, and the combined amount on a per active donor basis, currently $980, seemingly impressive number. Although it is 17% below the $1,178 that was seen at this point last year, and is even running shy of 2019 amounts. Now, 2020 not only saw the pandemic emergency and a disputed presidential election, but also a broad-based social justice movement. At the peak last June, more than 50% of donation dollars were going to social causes, up from a normal level of just 5%. Beyond the numbers, generosity is about more than money. Coran said she believes in approaching generosity through the lens of mutuality and solidarity and recognition of our shared humanity, rather than as a divisive definition between people who have and people who don't. Another thing, in terms of these charitable contributions, even if you don't itemize deductions and instead take the standard deduction on your federal tax return, either way, you can still deduct up to $300 in charitable deductions on your 2021 returns. $600 if you're married and filing jointly. But just beware that donations to count as a tax deduction, it's a couple of important requirements. First, they have to be made to an eligible organization. The IRS lists some of them specifically, but generally talks about the eligibility requirements. Second, the donations must be made in cash, a check, credit card, or debit card, and you'll need to keep the receipts in case you're audited. One other important change to individual charitable giving, this year, those who itemize can write off 100% of their adjusted income for qualifying cash donations, not just 60% as it. Okay. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. You can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. I have an article in this week's edition that asks, will the Fed raise rates 6 times over the next 2 years? Huh? Where'd that come from?
Well,
Market Bull Phil Orlando believes the Fed will raise interest rates 6 times over the next 2 years to rein in significant ongoing consumer price increases. Last week he said, quote, we will see 2 quarter-point rate hikes in the second half of 2022 and perhaps another 4 quarter-point rate hikes over the course of 2023. In other words, Orlando and his firm, Fidelity Hermes, sees the Fed funds rate rising from its current 0 to 0.25% range to 1.75% to 2% range by the end of 2023. The first expected major rate move envisioned in the CME Group's Fed Watch tool is next May, when traders see almost a 40% chance of rates increasing to at least 0.25% to 0.5%. Those chances, however, rise to 63% the next month in June. In July next year, there's a 48% chance that rates will be increased to at least 0.5% to 0.75%. And a 49% chance of rates going to at least 0.75% to 1% in February 2023. Fidelity, again, sees 3 additional 1/4-point increases during the rest of 2023 to get to Orlando's target of 1.75% to 2%. Still historically low rates. Now, Orlando, whose company has roughly $634 billion in assets under management, is concerned about the government's latest inflation numbers. Both the Personal Consumption Expenditures Index, the PCE, and the Consumer Price Index, the CPIU, are rising at their highest pace in over three decades, 31 years, I believe. Commerce Department reported last week that prices for core PCE, that is excluding food and energy prices, jumped 4.1% in October from a year ago. The core PCE inflation measure, which is most relied upon by the Fed, has been inching above the Fed's preferred, former preferred 2% goal for some time now this year. The CPIU for all consumers, again, also rose significantly in October. It was up to, some say 5.9, but I believe the official number is 6.2% year over year, including food and energy, but not seasonally adjusted. However, if you use John Williams' figures from which are published on shadowstats.com, applying government methodologies in place before 1990 and 1980, then CPIU is actually closer to 10% plus or minus to 14% plus or minus as of the end of October. So Orlando said, given the surge in inflation that we've been seeing lately, it wouldn't surprise me if the Fed accelerated the pace of tapering. Now, once the tapering is done, we'd expect to see some rate increases, and that's what could take Wall Street by surprise. He claims, which, by the way, again, has been pricing in a tapering, a monthly tapering of $15 billion each month. He claims Fed has been talking a good game along with the Biden administration in terms of the, quote, transitory nature of inflation. Yet, Orlando believes the Fed understands the magnitude of the problem. I have little doubt that they understand it. The question is, will they execute what needs to be done in a correct and timely manner? Orlando cites the decision to start rolling back the Fed's purchase of $120 billion in treasuries and mortgage-backed securities this month. I honestly haven't seen that they've started this, and, well, today is the last day of November. We'll check on that for you for the program tomorrow or Thursday. He says they're going to remove, going to remove accommodation at a reasonable pace over the next 2 years or so in order to try to get their hands around inflation and see if they can get that genie stuff back into the bottle. Well, 2 years is about twice as long as what Powell's now saying in terms of getting the tapering done by next June or July. Now, six increases in two short years does seem a bit far-fetched for a Fed that's been hell-bent on an indefinite period of easing. But in a second Jay Powell term, well, don't count it out either. I mean, even if the Fed were to just raise rates three to four times in 2022-23, it's more important to understand that one or more of those increases could be 50 basis points or more, and not the usual 25 or quarter percent increase. In other words, without knowing whom President Biden will appoint to other impending vacancies on the Fed Board of Governors, besides nominating Powell for a second term as chair, it's hard to know how any new board composition will move to deal with inflation and employment wherever they both will be at any given time in the future. The moral of this story, ladies and gentlemen, prepare accordingly. Now, Thomas Lubick, he's a researcher at the Richmond Fed, has been looking at the weirdness in the labor market. Specifically, he's studying why there are an extraordinary number of job openings despite employment levels remaining below pre-crisis levels. why are there so many unfilled job openings, and why is there a vanishing number of people working? You know, skill mismatches, regional mismatches, maybe a bunch of people who've retired due to gains in stocks, gold, or even the value of their home. Lubick says reliable child care, the cost of child care is likely a significant contributing factor as well. And anxiety about returning to the work site in the middle of this pandemic. And we'll be lucky if this is the middle of it. Maybe the pandemic has just been causing millions of people to reevaluate their life choices. Maybe people are sitting on pandemic savings that haven't been drawn down yet. Whatever it is, people like Joe Wiesenthal of Bloomberg has an idea. Let's just ask the people and make it an official report, whether it's done by the Fed or other government agencies. We'll post on our Facebook page at TGS Coins. That's the at sign, DGS Coins, one word, what some of these questions he believes should be. That's all we have time for today. That came quickly. Confusing time for markets and for consumers as well. Keep following us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll try to keep you up to date on all this stuff that's going on. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks as always to our producer Todd and to our loyal listeners, you, for tuning into Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye.